From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The longest partial government shutdown in U.S. history is now in its fourth week, and hundreds of thousands of federal workers have missed their first paycheck. That includes a lot of scientists, like those at the U.S. Geological Survey in Woods Hole. Center Director Rob Thieler told WCAI's Sarah Mises-Tan that his employees are a microcosm of government workers across the country.
We have several people who have both family members employed by either the USGS or another federal agency. So we have some families with both breadwinners not working. Currently, we have single parents. We have people who are the sole provider for their households. We have a lot of early career staff for whom stability is important as they evaluate whether a career in civil service is going to be right for them. They have college and other debts that they need to pay off.
Government employees are likely to receive back pay once the shutdown ends, but not government contractors who, in some cases, work side by side with government scientists and do some of the same jobs. On top of missed paychecks, Thieler says the shutdown means his center hasn't been able to provide information to support policy work at the Massachusetts Office of Coastal Zone Management. The Northeast Aquaculture Conference in Boston and the American Meteorological Society meeting in Phoenix were both hit hard by federal researchers' inability to attend and present their work this past week. For this and other recent science news, I'm joined now by Benjamin Thompson of the journal Nature and the Nature podcast. Benjamin, always good to talk with you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Nice to talk to you too, Heather.
Getting information on what is and is not happening due to this partial government shutdown is actually a little bit difficult, but Nature has been on top of what is happening in terms of some of the federal science agencies. What do we know?
Yes, we've got a few stats here, and what I will say is at the time of recording, this shutdown is currently ongoing. Roughly 800,000 government employees are affected. They're legally barred from working, and they're not being paid. And understandably, that could well be having some effects on science.
We've heard some things like, the 2018 kind of review of climate for the year and extreme weather events, that's not being produced. Something people might notice, USDA, some information services are being interrupted. But some of the ripple effects could actually come down to science funding outside of the government. So what's going on with some of those major government funding agencies, National Science Foundation and the National Institute of Health?
The National Science Foundation has suspended its grants reviews. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have taken their weather and climate databases offline. The FDA, I think, are struggling at the moment as well, and NASA too.
But the National Institute of Health is kind of the oddball here. They seem to be unaffected.
Yes, not just them, but also the Department of Energy as well. And that's because Congress approved funding for them until the 30th of September this year. And that was a part of the end of the 2019 budget.
Well, this is an issue we will continue to follow here on Living Lab Radio. And we'd like to hear from you, our listeners. Are there data or information products you rely on that aren't coming out? Or are you part of a long-term research project that's being interrupted? You can tell us how the shutdown is affecting you, your work, and your community by emailing us. We're livinglabradio@wgbh.org. Or you can tweet us at Living Lab Radio. Benjamin Thompson, on a slightly different note, but sticking with Washington news, President Trump finally has a White House science advisor and someone to lead the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy.
Yes, and it's not sure whether he'll be able to work or not with regards to your last story. And this is, of course, Kelvin Drogemeyer. And back on January the 2nd, he was confirmed by the Senate.
And that's something we've talked about going back a few months, an appointment that actually the science community has been fairly positive about. But as you say, not really clear where the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy stands in this shutdown.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Drogemeyer himself is an expert in extreme weather events, and his appointment has been generally met with sort of positive reviews from what I understand.
On a different note, this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. Maybe appropriate now, China has become the first to land on the moon's far side. Do we know what they're doing there?
Yes, this is the Chang'e 4 probe, and apologies to any of your Chinese-speaking listeners, which on the 3rd of January sort of landed in a giant crater on the far side of the moon. And this is the first probe to visit the region in over 60 years. In fact, well, it's the first anything to visit in over 60 years. The last thing was a Soviet sort of satellite that sent back some images in 1959.
And why is the far side of the moon so important and of such great interest to the research community?
It's something that we don't know very much about. The far side is permanently hidden from Earth, so you can't really see what's going on. And in this case, this probe and the little rover that's sort of driven off it onto the surface of the moon is having a look at this giant impact crater that it's landed in to try and find out how it was made and how old it is and what sort of was going on at the time when the moon was pelted by these kind of giant impacts.
So some really intriguing basic research that has implications for our understanding of how our planet and the moon actually developed.
Yeah, and the probe is also doing a lot of other experiments as well. Radio measurement of the early universe, looking at sort of the radiation pattern on the lunar surface. It's got ground-penetrating radar. It's doing some geology work. You name it. I think some of my favorite things are, though, apparently there's a small climate-controlled environment on this probe which contains some potato seeds, some Arabidopsis seeds, and some silkworm cocoons. Quite why I don't know, but presumably this is very, very important.
All right, maybe some terraforming ideas there. Finally, Benjamin Thompson, astrophysicists are also really excited that a Canadian telescope has confirmed the existence of something called fast radio bursts. What is all the excitement about?
Well, I mean, their name gives you a bit of an idea as to what they are. And they are these super brief, like millisecond-long radio bursts. They're coming from unknown parts of the universe. And up until, well, very recently, it's only 2007 the first one of these was detected. And sort of late last summer, this special telescope in Canada called CHIME was able to pick up another 13. And there's only been about sort of 70 or so of these that have been detected thus far.
And they're still quite a mystery to scientists. What's even producing them isn't yet known, right?
Absolutely. What's quite striking about this new work is that one of these radio bursts is what's called a repeater. And as its name suggests, it is this repeating radio signal. And this is only the second one of these. And the researchers were very excited about discovering this one because it means that as it's repeating, rather than being just a sort of one-off transient event, they can maybe hone in on the sort of place that it's coming from in the cosmos. And one of the researchers I spoke to who's working on this project, he said there's dozens of theories as to where these signals might come from, but he thinks that they might come from these kind of dense and turbulent regions of the universe where there's lots of interstellar gas and things are getting jumbled about.
Well, everybody loves a good mystery. We'll have to keep an eye on that and see what they can figure out. Benjamin Thompson heads up the Nature podcast. Thanks, as always, for keeping us up to date.
Heather, it's my pleasure.
Up next, the FDA approved 18 new cancer drugs last year. We'll explore what 2019 might bring in terms of advances in cancer treatment. Stay with us.